Hey, this is Jessie.
This is Helen.
And we're Asian Bitches Down Under, chatting about all things that we've been consuming this week in arts, culture, music, TV. It's been a very, very interesting week for the both of us. Mm-hmm. We've a lot of things happening in terms of, you know, some neo-Nazi and anti-trans protests in Melbourne. Helen wants to talk about Harmony Day and her thoughts about that. We're going to dig into the books that we've read and the movies that we've seen. First of all, Helen, how are you?
I'm feeling so tired. I think it's just because I've got my period this week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, too much information. But
No, never.
Very tired, and this week's weather has been really strange. You know, we're heading into almost like an autumn climate, but it's been we had like huge thunderstorm yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, there were a couple of flashes of lightning where I am in the inner west of Sydney, but it didn't storm. It just was like lightning, yeah. Flashes of lightning when I was outside having a walk and carrying an umbrella and thinking, holy moly, I should get back home. But I always fear that I'll get struck by lightning.
But lightning, I know.
Even though the chances are probably quite slim.
Very rare. Yeah. Yeah, so I was saturated when I was picking up my kid.
Oh, yeah?
Talking about tiredness, a couple of weeks ago, Jamie Lee Curtis put out like an announcement or something on her social media saying that concerts should be held during daytimes rather than night. I was like, yeah, I'm totally up for that because I cannot function after 8
p.m. I can't function after 9. Well, like I can. The only thing I want to do after 9 o'clock is read or watch a movie.
Yes.
I don't want to be around people. I don't, unless they're like my closest friends or family, I don't want to be in a crowd. You know, I'm like, ugh. But anyway, can you just go on with Jamie Lee's post? Because it was quite funny.
Yeah. And I think she actually got the response. She was asking for a band that asked, you know, why they have this, their concert late at night. And apparently the band responded
Didn't she say, didn't she say specifically address Coldplay? She said, I want to see Coldplay at 1 p.m.
Oh, was it Coldplay? I don't know if it was called Coldplay or something.
Oh, but you sent me the screenshot.
Oh, did I? I can't remember it at all. See how she tired
said,
I am.
Yeah, she said, I want to see Coldplay at 1 p.m.
Well, apparently they replied and say that they will be holding a specific concert in the afternoon or something.
Yeah, like that, there's something, and this, it goes back to this thing that I have never enjoyed in my life, and I know I'll be losing a lot of listeners by saying this, but I don't really enjoy live music, and I've said this before, it is jazz, and it's a small venue. I don't like live music because it's everything I hate. Like, it's late into the night. Often bands freaking start playing at like after 10:30. You know, the headliners. I am dead by 10:30. Like, no one should have a conversation with me unless you're my partner after 10:30. I don't want to talk to you. It's often in a crowded place, which I hate. And the thing I hate the most, loud net sounds. Mm-hmm. I completely agree with Jamie Lee Curtis. I only want to see matinee shows. I had a friend of mine this week who went to a matinee in Melbourne, and she was saying kind of like, she was kind of like poking fun at the crowd because usually it's like, you know, very old people who go attend matinees. But I'm like, I would love to just go only to matinee shows. I mean, obviously we can't because unless it's the weekend because we work during the day. Mm-hmm. But even kind of like, you know, sometimes at the Opera House, and I'm not attacking the Opera House, obviously, but I just have noticed that events at the Opera House, when they have headline speakers, often they start at like 8 o'clock.
Yes.
I don't know. It's just a bit too late. I think the perfect time to start a talk is 7, probably 6:30 or 7. And I love that Jamie Lee Curtis, who, you know, as we all know, recently won her first Oscar. I love that she said this because I love anything that, you know, anyone who tries, I love anything that she kind of, she's just like someone who I feel is sort of under-recognized and underappreciated in Hollywood because, you know, she's a Nepo baby, but she's also very talented, but also because of her sort of history with genre films, you know, her past with Halloween and all that.
Yeah, like typecast it into
character. One of the best films ever, Freaky Friday with Lindsay Lohan.
Yes. Yeah, that was really
seriously
fun.
But also, and while we're mentioning Jamie Lee Curtis, I saw her in one of her earliest roles, I believe. I'm not quite sure. But she's quite young in this film. Last night we watched Trading Places, 1983 film with Eddie Murphy. Have you seen that, Helen?
That's the one before Coming to America, isn't it? Yeah.
I think so, yeah. And it's
yeah, my husband keeps saying that we need to watch that film, but then I just keep putting it off.
Oh, one of my favorite people in the world, I won't tell you who, I won't say publicly who. Oh, it's not Billy, by the way. Someone else who deeply, deeply I care for, they have told me to see it for so long. Mm. And I was never in the mood. Last night I was in the mood and we watched it and it's terrific. There is, I have to say, one particular scene that has drastically aged terribly. I won't spoil it for you, but if you guys, listeners out there who have seen the movie, you clearly know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But other than that, terrific film. So much fun. It's terrific. I loved it.
Okay. I'll definitely plan the time to go and watch Trading Places. Coming back to speaking about Jamie Lee Curtis on her point about having shows at the middle of the day, I did put out a question out to our followers on IG, and funny enough that all the response that I got was like, yeah, I'm up for it, you know, get the shows during the day. I cannot put up with any late nights.
Yeah.
And most of our listeners are similar age to us. They're not like past 50s, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess it's like you don't want to stay up too late it's almost like you have to have a couple of coffees to go to that late night show. And then by the end of the show, because of the caffeine, you can't fall asleep. And it's become problematic next day. You don't get enough sleep, especially if the show is on like a Sunday night and you have to work on Monday. For me, is I feel like if it's at the middle of the day, I understand that people prefer, maybe some people prefer nighttime because the atmosphere, I don't know, there's some sort of mysterious, dark atmosphere that you enjoy. But during the daytime, like, after the concert or the show, you can still go out and have an early dinner with your friends and you can get a good night's sleep afterwards.
Yeah, I think also live music is a young person's vocation or like leisure activity, I feel like, because when you're young, I guess obviously you have more energy, but also young people go out at night to find sexual partners, I guess, or like find their, like a lot of single people, you know, go out to find to do stuff like, you know, go to see live music to find romantic partners perhaps. There's a youth culture around live music that I think, you know, I'm not saying obviously older people don't go and see music, it's just like I feel like any public space that any kind of public gathering at night for me has this kind of fundamental essence of youthfulness in it, or like the sense of like a bunch like younger people gathering, because you know when you're younger you want to meet more people, you have more time and space to engage with other people, you know. And when you're older, I think that kind of spark and that kind of nocturnal excitement loses its spark, I feel personally. Anyway, I definitely
That's
have gone out less, but also because perhaps as like someone who's in a couple, I feel like if I had a choice to go out or stay at home, I'd definitely rather stay at home. Like being like older and also being in a relationship makes me definitely more domesticated. And I'm so like, the outside world has lost its appeal to me not entirely, but just like much more than it had when I was younger, I'd say.
Yeah. But what about like classical music concerts? I found that a lot of them don't start into 7:30 and 8 o'clock. And if you have a 3 hour symphony, won't finish until past 10 o'clock.
I
Yeah.
just mostly I hate just the transportation and the logistics of getting home
That's right.
after a show. Like I think the other a few weeks ago we went to see the Backstreet Boys. Thankfully, thank God, because the guys are in their 50s, the show ended right like around 10:45. So it wasn't too late. Thank fuck, because I just hate late nights out. But yeah, like after the show, it was so tedious and kind of annoying to have to find your way back home. And the train station shut its doors.
Sydney train railway system is not the best. It's probably the one of
Oh,
the
really? Well, I don't know because I've never done much research into, other places. So I don't know, but yeah, I think if you are not kind of like someone who has the means to just take a taxi or an Uber, it's just like public transportation is so annoying to have to think
Absolutely.
about after a show. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, just there's something about the nighttime that maybe there are like obviously you can older people maybe find themselves retaining that sense of wanting to go out at night, but for me the nighttime is for young people. Like I don't see myself feeling very comfortable or like enjoying outdoor spaces at night. I feel like in Europe it might be a different vibe because in Europe, they have dinner at like 11 p.m. and kids roam the streets at at late at night, late into the night. I know that a friend of mine went to Bologna a few years ago and said that, there were like, late into the night there were still whole families, traversing the streets, and we don't have, really have that culture here in Australia.
But because of the population density as well, it might happen more frequently within the metropolitan area. And I think it's quite normal in Asia. Most Asian countries as well, because shops are open late and plenty of night
Exactly.
markets.
Yeah, everything closes at like 6 p.m. here in Sydney.
Yeah, everything closes at four.
Oh, it's so depressing.
Okay, speaking of evening events, you have attend
Oh yeah, I've gone out every night this week. But they have not been live music. I feel like I'm shitting on live music. I'm not. I love jazz. Now I'll put it at that. I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, this week the organization which we love to give a shout out to called Welcome Merchant. It's a organization that helps power refugee powered businesses. Welcome Merchant had an event on Tuesday night, I believe, in Parramatta. I took my dear partner and we got lost because we haven't been to Parramatta in a long time.
Yeah, Parramatta has changed so much.
Oh, it is crazy.
You've got light
It is
rail
insane. It
now, and
is
all the
insane.
streets are very
Yeah.
different. I haven't been there
So
for
we
years.
well the place we went to was situated in a sort of a building or a locale called 5 PHIVE. And it was in Parramatta Square, which kind of resembles kind of like Darling Harbour slash Martin Place slash kind of any kind of typical modern day contemporary CBD situation. Like the buildings were so
In a
tall, I was
station.
just, it is near the station, it's near Westfield. But so this particular event was situated around the Uyghurs, who are obviously the oppressed population in East Turkestan. I went in not knowing much about this population. I know that a few years ago, the New York Times led a sort of really intense and comprehensive investigation into the so-called concentration, I won't say so-called concentration camps, they are concentration camps.
Re-education camp, something like that.
And
I haven't
there
heard
were
before.
yeah and there was a panel on Tuesday night involving a couple of incredible female speakers, just absolutely incredible. And I was completely bowled over. I was completely bowled over by the way in which they talked about their marginalization, the way in which they don't like the fact that Western media often portrays them as minorities. One of the speakers said they're not minorities, they're actually the majority in that part of the world. Mm-hmm. They're just often described as the ethnic minority because it was something about the way in which the selection of the words and the language used to describe them is also, they said it was kind of like also a form of oppression. Mm-hmm. One panelist had an issue with the word allegedly used by Western media. She said that she didn't appreciate kind of how Western media says, oh, this guy was allegedly taken to the camps or allegedly kidnapped. Like the use of the word allegedly kind of invalidates
their experience,
like, completely just denies their experience. Mm-hmm. But I guess Western media, because of so much
the tiptoes around, you know,
because they're just trying to save themselves, as in, like, yeah. I'm not trying to defend them obviously, but yeah. Because of resource shortages and because of censorship in China, mm-hmm. It yeah. was, you know, for a lot of different reasons, perhaps a lot of people throw in that word allegedly to save themselves from, you know, any legal backlash. I'm not sure. But, you know, sitting there as like a person who is half Chinese, like our father is I don't know, like our dad, he's half Chinese and half Taiwanese, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, hell. So like as someone who has Chinese blood in my body from running through my veins, it was quite interesting for me to sit there hearing the way in which they were calling out the Chinese government and the CCP and like and being like experiencing what it feels like to be part of a population or part of a culture that oppresses, who has oppressed these Uyghurs. I still feel very like I don't at all have any kind of authority over, like I don't feel confident talking about this issue because I myself haven't done enough research to say that I could like have any strong kind of just factual information about this issue, which is completely the fault of mine. But I guess I just wanted to come on this podcast and talk about the event itself and, you know, give those panelists and Welcome Merchant a shout out because they're doing incredible work.
Okay, so it's called Welcome Merchant. We will definitely share their link on our show notes, and if anyone who are interested, we really urge everyone to our listeners to, and you know, check it out, their events and their program. Personally, I even thought that our ethnicity were being regarded as Chinese, but I've dissociated myself from Chinese from you know politically for a very long time. I always regard myself as Chinese, and I've been following the oppression of Uyghurs for a period of time, you know, in the last couple of years.
Because, you're way more well-read than me. Yeah, so. Because
a lot of Taiwanese podcasters, they talk about it. And like you said, Western medias, because they use their own Western perspectives to go and investigate. And often they are barricaded outside of certain areas that they cannot access. And they are very limited sources that they can get to. I think everyone really need to, you know, open up their eyes to see what the CCP are doing against this group of ethnicities. And also, yeah, they are something that I hope that Taiwan can do a lot more better. I think Western medias need to approach Taiwanese journalists who had more insights, who actually had approached people who escaped, you know, from the re-education camps as well. They had actual lived experience. And don't use the word allegedly, because if the truth is there, telling the truth, you can't use allegedly. It's almost like, oh, you need someone to define what is real for you, even so that you've experienced it yourself.
Yeah.
It's such a painful label. You know, it's like, I know that I experienced torture and disempowerment, but then, you know, Western media saying that, oh, just because that there are no records or there's no videos of it, then we can only use allegedly, because it's not true. And it's like a second time, it's a second in time insult again, I feel.
Yeah. I guess it's like when rape victims are not believed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's almost, yeah, that's pretty much the same thing, I think. Yeah.
Hi there. If you're new to our show, thanks for tuning in into our program, and we hope you will stay with us for a very long time. And if you are a regular listener, we're forever grateful for your continuous support throughout this period of uncertainty. It has really helped this podcast to gain a great exposure, as our mission is to center the perspectives of people who look like us, who are marginalized historically to the sideline of conversation. So if you haven't already, we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast on Omni, Apple, Google, or Spotify, and leave a rating and review. And of course, as a small podcast program, we rely on listeners' support to continue this work. Please do check out our Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation in order for us to continue to advocate the intersectionality in the podcast industry.
You want to talk about John Wick?
Oh, that's such a weird segue.
That's very strange. I never thought about that you will watch John Wick.
Oh, well, you know, my favorite thing in the world is movies. I think books and movies are the reason I live and what I live for, nothing else. I'm so grateful that I get to, you know, get invited to preview screenings. And this was by Studio Canal. John Wick 4 is the movie that we went to see this week. Terrific. It's the best of the four.
Okay.
We had watched all three in the last few weeks in the lead up, just to refresh our minds, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's terrific. Afterwards, I went online and read Anthony, is it Anthony Lane, the guy who writes for The New Yorker? I forget his name, someone Lane.
Anthony and, something, yeah, I remember seeing his name.
Yeah, The New Yorker film critic, he also agreed that it's the best of the four. Mm-hmm. There are dogs, there's a hot black man in it.
That's enough for me.
Yeah, exactly. There's an amazing end to the film. There's a great Donnie Yen, I think is his name. Plays a blind assassin. He's terrific.
Why blind? Because he played a blind guy in Rogue One.
Did he?
Well, yeah.
Right, I didn't know that. Okay.
Is there something to do with, you just have to put an Asian person that is
with a disability? really? Yeah, like Hong Chow in Downsizing. I always think of Hong Chow in Downsizing, and yeah, maybe Hollywood thinks, oh, we'll just like gather all the minority identities all in one, push them all together, you know, make them queer as well as
with a disability,
and a color. Yeah, exactly. Just push them into one character. I mean, you often find that in Hollywood. Yeah, exactly. Hollywood films. Yeah, let's budget. Let's put in all the different minorities into this one character. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was great. We had a lot of fun. Music is terrific. A lot of different kind of jumping around the globe, Paris, mm-hmm. Berlin, Osaka was featured prominently. It's Before I finish up, Helen, I want to say it is 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. Is that
yeah,
that it is the longest, fucking, I think.
It is so – I mean, this – I had to go in being really kind of like I had to really psych
not
myself
anyway,
up.
Not
yeah,
because anything.
Because, as you know, I don't like books over 200 pages and I don't like movies over an hour and a half. And this was almost 3 hours, but it never felt tedious.
Okay.
I never got bored. It's terrific. Mm-hmm. Terrific. It comes out in cinemas this week, I believe, so go catch it if you can.
Yeah, I had to find time to go and see it. I enjoy watch John Wick movie since the first one because it's involved dogs and revenge for dogs.
And Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. I've always said to my friend that if John Wick, this character, comes out with insurance for dogs,
yeah,
it will be a massive hit.
Yeah, I know. Dogs feature a lot. Dogs and daughters. There are no wives. Wives always dead in these John Wick series. Women are dead, but daughters and dogs, you know, loyalty, sense of propriety and like a fatherhood and honor, all that is a big trope in these films. But yeah, there's a cute dog in here, a couple of cute dogs, and it was very sad to see I forget his name, but the concierge, you told me he died recently, the black actor who plays the concierge.
I can't it's out of my mind at the moment.
Apparently he's like also in The Wire. It was sad.
Very young, yeah.
No, and he was 60 years old. He died of natural causes. And he literally died last week. It's very, very fresh. It's very shocking and new still. So it's very, very sad.
Mm-hmm. So for myself, I didn't watch anything this week because I don't know what I was busy about. So I only was able to complete reading Dancing Bears, which is by the Polish journalist Witold Blaski. We briefly mentioned him a couple of episodes before about his other book, How to Fear a Dictator. So Dancing Bears, this book divides into two sections. The first section focuses on the history and the rescue procedures of dancing bears in the region of Bulgaria, which is Eastern Europe. A place that I'm totally unfamiliar with. So there was a sanctuary which was set up by foundings of foreign charities to discontinue the culture of capturing wild bears and train them for entertainment. And the second part is about how Sizblaski traveled around the areas of Eastern Europe and also Cuba, where they were formerly occupied by the communists and dictators before the collapse of USSR, and asking the residents there about how they feel about the current situations. So he interviewed them around the early 2000s, and they were asking them about, how do you feel about current life compared to the communist eras? And it's almost like a similar analogy of the other book, How to Fear a Dictator. The people that he spoke to expressed, you know, a lot of uncertainties about joining the Western society, joining EU, and they spoke about the they were longing for the pastimes. You know, they were very pride of what they did before and their leaders, and you get the similar vibe of the chefs and the cooks who cooked for the dictators, that they talk genuinely about how kind that their dictator were, or how the good things that they've done for their country. It actually prompted me, I don't know if you ever did this, but when I was if I'm reading a place that I've never been before or I'm not familiar with, that's hardly appear on the news or in the media, I would go onto Google Map and look up the area, and then pinpoint a street, and I just want to look at the street view. I just want to kind of get a sense of visual what the journalist was writing about.
Yeah.
And because for most people in Australia, I mean, at least for myself, I don't get we don't get enough news about that area.
We don't at all.
Because the book talks about Albania, Estonia, and also Bulgaria. So many people that the journalist interview, they talked about the former dictators like Hoxha, Castro, Stalin. The older people who lived through those eras, they really cherish those days, you know, praising how good that their nation were under the leadership of communism. They had jobs and they had resources that were distributed equally, and to, you know, capitalism came into their country. Before that, they had free education. So, and now they feel like their country is just, they got out of communism, but the Western nations are not looking after them enough. Mm. So I looked up Google Map, and the places that were mentioned in the book, even like Serbia, the streets look really dilapidated. They look really run down. You know, it reminds me kind of like Taiwan 30 years ago.
Right.
Even the city area, it was more like Zengka, you know, where we were, our grandparents' area, the countryside, where they had fields of rice. But there's not a lot of aquaculture productions in Eastern Europe, I'm assuming now. But looking at the street sites, it's just very run down. There's graffiti everywhere, and doesn't feel like the councils were cleaning up overgrown empty spaces. So it's quite sad. I think Eastern Europe, and I don't know if what's happening in Ukraine now would actually remind and bring awareness to people in the West to be more focused of what's happening in the Eastern Europe.
I don't know much about that part of the world. Okay, so my relationship to Bulgaria is probably the only one is Garth Greenwell, who wrote about his time in Bulgaria teaching English, I believe.
Uh-huh.
I think he was teaching English to Bulgarian kids in his books, What Belongs to You, I think is what it's called. It's behind me somewhere in my bookshelf. But What Belongs to You and Cleanness is both Garth Greenwell's books about, you know, a fictionalized version of his travails over there in Bulgaria. And his, I think he lived in Sofia, which is the capital, I believe.
Yes, yeah.
Or Sofia, I don't know how you say it. But, yeah, it seems like an interesting place.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of remainings of very traditional way of architect buildings.
Mm, mm.
I mean, people flocked into Prague, Czechoslovakia after it was up, I don't know, a couple of decades ago. And from what I heard from my friends who travel there, they're saying like, oh, it's like, it feels like it's gone back time when you go there.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of gypsies around that area. It just feels like it's a total different place to what you see in the very capitalized Western countries.
Yeah.
And hey, what about you?
I started a book given to me by a friend of mine, Kyle. Shout out to Kyle. The Love Songs of W.E.D. Du Bois. It is obviously very, it's like a book that I feel like maybe 12 months, 18 months ago, everyone was talking about. I've come to it late. Trying to not let the size intimidate me, because like I said before, I don't like books over 200 pages. This one is, let me just look at it because it's right next to me. This one is bigger than two bricks put together.
Yeah, very thick book.
This one is almost 800 pages.
Oh.
It's 797. However, it doesn't feel big because it's very clean, easy storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really easy to read, which is what you want if you're going to invest your time with a story that long. I don't feel like I withdraw physically when I see it. I kind of just think, yeah, it's just a friend that I will be carrying with me alongside me for the next, I guess, a week, 2 weeks. I always really, really, really cherish the times when during the year when I get to read something that's not work related.
Mm-hmm.
So I review books for a major publication in Australia, and I do them fortnightly. So in between those weeks, when I do find the time to pick up a book of my own choosing, it is like absolutely a godsend. I mean, I'm just so grateful that I get paid to read, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful for the job. And also for the time I get when I get to choose my own books like this one. And I think because I have been reading a few shorter books, I felt like diving into something long form. And this one, I've only kind of just started. I think I've read about 100 pages, so I have another 600 to go, 600-700. And it's kind of like a set in the past, but it's a sort of family saga.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of different generations.
What's the geographical location?
America,
okay.
Georgia. But at the moment we're kind of, I think from the blurb, we can say safely that it centers around a young girl called Ailey. Yeah, her name's Ailey. Ailey Pearl Garfield. And what happens to her life? I guess we shall see. I'll keep reading and get back to you, Helen, as to how it is. But yeah, I'm very excited to see where this goes. So this is The Love Songs of W.E.D. Du Bois by Honoré Fanon Jeffers.
Fantastic. Okay, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will dive into some discussions about Harmony Days and also what had happened in Melbourne and also Canberra yesterday, I believe. Yeah.
Mm.
Okay, we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. 2023 marks the 75th anniversary of Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and nowhere in the world except for Australia calls the International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination Harmony Day. So only in Australia we call it Harmony Day. I've only known about this a couple of years ago when my kids start coming back from school having a note saying that, oh, we're going to have a Harmony Day celebration in the last week of March. Initially, I thought it was a great idea. And for many second generation or first generation migrants like us, it was almost like a day you can showcase your culture, especially you have kids, you know, you can dress up your kids in traditional clothes, which I did with my first child. And back in the days where pre-COVID, they and the days that the school had very few dietary restrictions, the school or the childcare actually encouraged students to bring a plate of food that represents your culture. So it was a bit of it's fun for us. So and then the student parade around the school oval or quadrangle with the traditional clothes, and they carry their national flags. And they invite the parents to come in for the morning. It's almost like a Easter parade, you know, and the parents talk to each other. We had a bit of fun. And it was really fun because I used to live in West Sydney. So you had a lot of different, quite diverse.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
However, I've heard a couple of funny stories as well where some mainland Chinese parents, they were upset of seeing Taiwanese flag. They were not happy I was seeing Taiwanese flag.
Wait, who? Where?
I've heard stories of other Taiwanese parents that they encounter mainland Chinese parents.
I'm so glad I've never actually personally experienced that myself.
Same for me. Yeah. So the real name for Harmony Day, which is, to me, Harmony Day is more like a oxymoron term. It's very contradictive because it's not really harmonious at all in Australia, I think. So International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination. I don't know if it's because it's too long for Aussies, or Aussies is just not clever enough to remember. Harmony Day sounds better for a lot of people in rhetorics, and perhaps it's easier for children to follow as well. But we really need to think about it. Are we really tackling racial issues through those, you know, celebrations? You know, Harmony Day sounds like it's very whitewashed and focus solely on the positivity of cultural diversity without opening dialogues of real racial
systemic discrimination. Yeah, well, in a way that International Women's Day is just a day to celebrate women. But no, nothing to address the systemic oppression of women around the world.
Yeah, you see that around my area, the communities, they held like morning teas, and people just sit around and they invite people from different ethnicities to talk. I don't know. I guess it's positive, but I don't know if it's enough. I've seen news that earlier this month, Green Senator Maureen Faruqi says Harmony Day really ignores the point of a global recognized day, and she wants that the government to revert the name to International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination. So this day has been observed annually by the international community on the March 21st to mark the day the police killed 69 people at the demonstration against apartheid in Shepherdville in South America in the 1960s. So there's an origin of it. But in Australia, we take the day under a new name during Howard government in 1999, and it's typically celebrated in school and workplace. There's not enough open discussions about how we are going to eliminate the discrimination in the racial terms. And it's really ridiculous to call a day a celebration, you know, while over last weekend we had anti-trans event and neo-Nazis on the street of Melbourne that openly displayed Nazi salute.
Yeah, Helen, tell us about what happened.
So I had to go down the rabbit hole and find out what really started all this protest, because, you know, how media like to amplify the very extremist and drastic pictures of the day. So the first thing that I saw was this group of neo-Nazis. I was like, oh my God, this is happening in Australia. Are we going to have like extreme right-wing terrorists, you know, stabbing people on the street? And so what happened was that there was a anti-trans event held by this British TERF by the name of, I don't even use the word TERF for her. I don't think she's even feminist. Under the name Posy Parker, which is not even a real name.
Yeah, because Posy Parker is a great American actress.
Yeah, it's I don't know, it's such an embarrassment and such an insult, like why she even picked the name. So many different sources provided different names, her different real names. I don't know, if you want your free speech, the least thing that you can do is provide your real name. So I looked up, I think her name is Kelly Jean Kim Minshaw or Kelly J. Kim. She goes by a lot of different names, and she's been campaigning for anti-trans and inciting hate speech. And she sets herself as a speaker for women. I'm quote, you know, for me, she's not a speaker for woman at all. And she has been known for connections with white supremacist advocates, and she was holding a talk in Melbourne over the weekend, which for some reason that perhaps the neo-Nazis group saw the opportunity to join her. I don't know if they were supporting her, but some people say they were not, because there was a Liberal MP, Moira Deming, who attend the anti-trans event to support Posy Parker. And then it sparked all this fiasco. And apparently that the Liberals were saying that they're going to expel this MP. I don't know if it's happening or not, because I know that there are a lot of Liberal representatives that are still very conservative, and they're anti-trans, they're anti-everything, but they don't want to appear as if they're doing so. Yeah, so this is what happened in Melbourne. And again, yesterday afternoon, I saw another piece of news, which is Posy Parker has moved to Canberra to do another speech, just to do another, speaking event. And then this time, Lydia Thorpe, another, the independent senator who was previously in the Greens, that she walked up with the Aboriginal flag and saying that, you're not welcome here. And unfortunately, she was stopped by a police and was tackled onto the ground. And it's absolutely disgusting to see that scene. Yeah, what do you think of this? I just saw it, like, I had full of rage yesterday that I just couldn't function properly. I just went on climbing.
Oh, yeah, and that's why I don't engage with any of it. And that's why I just write movie reviews and book reviews.
But you still have to know about these things, because
Yeah, and I do know it through you, but.
we just celebrated World Pride Day, a couple of weeks ago in Sydney, where Sydneysiders are saying that, oh, we pride ourselves as, Australia is so advanced, we're so progressive about LGBTQI plus communities. And then we have invited this transphobic, I can't find, I just absolutely cannot find any words to describe her that is appropriate to speak publicly.
Yeah, and that's why I mean, you all this anger that you're carrying, that is precisely the reason why I very deliberately and very violently don't turn my attention to it. Not because I don't not want to acknowledge it, or because I am not shocked and dismayed and like you said, disgusted. Obviously, I share all those sentiments, but I put I just, yeah, I don't want to make, I just, I let you do all the talking about politics. I'll happily just talk forever about movies and books. That's all I want to think about for the rest of my life. I can't do any, like, politics is, the older I get, the more I'm just like, if you want to have a conversation about politics and the state of the world when it comes to those abhorrent people, I will listen, but I can't contribute because I the moment I open my mouth about it, or I also just don't I don't feel qualified to talk about it because I haven't done all the research and reading up about about it in the way that you have, Helen. And it's I just yeah my I want to keep my safe space as I treasure my kind of mental health more and more, and I know that, speaking about it or engaging with this is just not healthy for me. So, yeah, so that's why I just like, only want to, the only thing that I look forward to is what's coming out next week at Dendy and the next books that are being released next week.
Well, I don't think I engage so much politically, but it affects me personally because I have friends in the community and I always see myself as an ally, which sounds,
Yeah, good on you.
well,
Yeah.
some people that
I
think
commend you for
very
that.
disingenuous, but I just, because when you talk about when a group of people that is transphobic, what are they going to target next? They will be possibly targeting people from other minority communities. They might be targeting Asians, they will be targeting people with disabilities. So it's a never-ending cycle that I think if people are not aware of the danger that this right-wing extremism is inflicting in our society, I obviously don't want to see what happened in what was it was a Christchurch in New Zealand a couple of years ago. This happened out of nowhere in Australia, and I think our government, I know they're taking actions against, right-wing extremism, but I think as a society, as a genuine citizen ourselves, that we need to be aware of these things happening. Moving on into to something a bit more lighthearted.
The World Happiness Report was released earlier this week. And Helen, do you want to guess where the happiest nation is? Which is the happiest nation?
Most likely the Scandinavian countries, isn't it? It's always been like Scandinavian countries.
Yeah, and Scandinavians are known for their great education system, gender equality, not known for their weather. It's cold. But yeah, Finland topped the list again, the sixth year in a row. The World Happiness Report is kind of like a survey of the well-being, income, general health, and you know, opinions, I guess, that a certain population have. Self-reflection, of course, self-reflective. It's interesting to note that what I found interesting was seeing that the top three countries. So the top three countries were Finland and Denmark, and then Iceland came in number three. Those countries were also at the top of the World Economic Forum's gender equality rankings. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, I said this to someone the other day, like, isn't it fantastic that, you know, the countries that are more equal are also the generally more happy. And they were like, they said to me, yeah, of course, like if half the population's upset or like not happy with their freedom or their ability, their human rights, obviously, you know, it won't be a happy place. And I was like, oh yeah, of course, like it seems like such a like basic conclusion to make that I didn't actually think about. But my first response when I found this out, I was like, isn't Finland freaking cold? Don't they get like three hours of sunlight a day?
Yeah, all three of those Scandinavian countries are very cold. And also, I do have a couple of questions, but go on. Yeah.
Oh, no, that was all I was going to say. And I think at the bottom of the list was like Lebanon and Afghanistan, the least happiest country in the world. And, you know, we obviously don't need to tell you listeners reasons why.
Reasons, yeah. I think so. You said Finland, Denmark, and
Iceland.
Yeah, but didn't Iceland went into like the whole country bankrupt a couple of years ago? I think they had a huge financial instability.
Did they?
Like bankrupt. Yeah, or something.
Right.
Yeah,
a couple years ago.
Not long ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the Scandinavian countries who have received the position of being the happiest in the world are most likely the ones that are highly involved in war. That's definitely the very important.
Hardly.
They haven't been really involved in conflicts with anyone around the globe. And they have, I'm assuming, someone can call me out, but I'm assuming they have really low immigration rates. I feel like they're very mono culture.
Yeah, they are.
So that will probably lower their issues of the importing of outsiders' culture or people who's trying to assimilate. I don't feel like any of those three countries have... Because when we're listening to refugee issues in Europe, it's usually Turkey, Germany, or somewhere that
the
is
UK.
Closer to the east, or the UK. Yeah, so hardly any Scandinavians. Don't really think I've heard enough stories about Scandinavians receiving refugees. Yeah, so... Maybe that's why they don't have to deal with changes.
Trauma and pain.
Yeah, trauma and pain, and also a lot of changes. If you just remain comfortable in your own home, that you're not having, you know, impact from outsiders, then you don't have to deal with all this. Yeah, not talking about dealing with sheds, but you're dealing with less issues. You're dealing with less conflict or less. What's the word I'm trying to find?
Different background, different values, different systems of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a couple of years ago, there was this, mass killing in Norway, which is very unfortunate. I think that's another right-wing extremist
Yeah.
who is really fucked up in his head.
Anders Breivik, I think was his name.
Yeah,
You
but
mean, yeah, the one that was shot like 70 plus kids at the, on the island?
was it in a camp or something like that?
Yeah, that was horrifying, yeah.
And I don't know I don't know Finland, Denmark, and also Iceland
Iceland, yeah.
immigration policy. Maybe they're
Yeah.
discriminatory, but no one ever talked about it because no one can ever get
Yeah.
in. I did
I
remember
think.
that one of my friend trying to get to Denmark because
Oh,
she
yeah.
traveled there a couple of years ago before she coming back to Australia. She says she loved the place, but she found it so hard to assimilate. And she
Yeah.
traveled
It's
there all,
very mo it's very, very one it's very monoculture.
Yeah, it's very monoculture, and
Every yeah.
and she said that she just don't feel like there is any job opportunities for her as an
Yeah.
Asian person there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That could be the reason why they call themselves the happy, because everyone are there's no differences.
Yeah.
That's just my own theory. Yeah.
That's very interesting. I really, yeah, I'm gonna think about that.
Yeah, and then apparently their language is very hard to learn. Finish. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just wanted to clarify, Helen's not saying that places with more, a lot of multicultural, Helen is not saying that it places with a lot of multiculturalism equals less happy. That's not what you're
Oh,
saying.
no, of course not. No. And
Yeah.
I think that happiness is very subjective. Like, what,
Yeah, I know.
how do you define happiness? People's idea of happy is very, very different.
Well, it's just a generic term, but they basically cut, they divide the survey, I guess, into, if you feel like you are free to do whatever you want, if you feel like your health is being looked after by the government, if you feel like you have support networks around you, if you feel like you have access to jobs and services, a lot of different things that all kind of contribute to, yeah. I get what you're saying. Like the term happiness is just an it's just I think it's just an easy way to categorize or to like
Satisfaction of your
give
nation.
the no it's just a broad title in order to a label this survey. But like you said, it has nothing to do with actual the emotion of happiness. I think it's just an umbrella term to like kind of analyzing the different logistical and material aspects of what makes a fulfilling and comfortable life.
Like, I would like to hear stories of an Asian or a non just black indigenous or people of color or someone who's not white living in Scandinavia countries and tell us a story there. Like, I would like to know that if you immigrate there, do you genuinely feel happy? Do you think that it is true that where you're living is the happiest, in the
Yeah.
world? Yeah, I like to. Yeah, I'm going a bit rebel on this subject, but yeah, it's interesting that these three countries are also led by women. They all have
Yeah.
female prime
Female
minister
leaders, yeah.
or presidents. Yeah.
Yep. So since we're both Helen and I are based in Australia, do you want to take a stab at which ranking Australia came in at?
Oof. How many are up there on the list?
Let me have a look right now. There are 137 countries. Afghanistan is at the very end.
I would say,
Yikes.
optimistically,
Yeah.
be 35, 35th.
Wow, okay. Wow. We came in at number 12.
Oh,
Yeah. I
okay.
mean, we're one of the richest countries in the world.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you wanna
I said
so
optimistically, and it sounds really sad when I say 35th.
Yeah. So in this report, I'm not sure why, but they've put Taiwan as Taiwan Province of China.
Oh my God. Yeah, that just gives me the idea of this list is so invalid for me. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
If they're gonna regard Taiwan as a province.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, Taiwan. Let's just say Taiwan, since you know, we're proud Taiwanese people. Do you want to guess where we came in?
I don't know. Maybe around 50-ish. I'll guess around 50. Meet 50. Yeah.
Let me just double check that. We came in at 29.
Oh, okay. That's not too bad. Yeah.
And
despite
all
the shitty news and the comments I hear daily from the Taiwanese people, what other countries are in the top 10?
I'm going to look for you now. Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Israel is number 4. Netherlands, Sweden, Norway, Switzerland, Luxembourg, and at number 10 is New Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand, I'll agree. Most of the Israel,
interesting, hey.
Now I'd like to know what sort of people that you interview. You ask.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it from us this week. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Google, and Apple, and give us a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support us, what we do here at Asian Bitches Down Under, head to Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation for us to continue the intersectionality in the podcast industry. Anything else this week, Jess?
No. Hopefully we'll have a good weekend of rest and relaxation.
Yes, we do. Yeah, yes, we will. Yeah, definitely. Okay, stay safe, everyone, and we'll chat to you next time.
Bye.